We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Cookout Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider. Brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. Go to visitmyrtlebeach.com to plan your vacation.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, hello.
Hello, Jones.
Well, Adam, we have a lot to do. And unfortunately, not a whole lot of it is super positive. We're going to look back at the East Carolina football game. Pirates top the Tar Heels 41-19, outscoring Carolina 20-0 in the second half. We'll talk about that. Also, this upcoming game against UCF, really, and quite honestly, almost seems a little bit secondary right now because there's very serious weather situation in the state of North Carolina with Hurricane Florence. We are going to talk to Rick Steinbacher, Associate AD here at Carolina, and get Rick's update on kind of how the Tar Heels are monitoring the weather situation and when a decision is hopefully to be made, what factors are being taken into account, all those things as far as if this game will even be played or not on Saturday here in Chapel Hill, currently scheduled for noon, Carolina and UCF. So both of those things going to be important to what we talk about today. We will try to have a little bit of fun, too. We've gotten a bunch of good emails here recently. We're going to go check some of those out, try to have fun with that. Adam has a list, I'm guessing, et cetera.
Would you be surprised if I did?
Not at all. But, Adam, let's start with Saturday.
You didn't provide me in your rundown of things we were going to talk about very many things that I wanted to talk about.
I know.
I'm thinking about leaving.
This is the thing, Adam. Saturday was not what the Tar Heels wanted. And I think the level of frustration right now is not just that the Tar Heels are losing. And that in and of itself is frustrating. Carolina is 4-14 in its last 18 games, going back to when they went to play Duke on a Thursday night. Carolina lost that game. Not that there was anything necessarily special about that game other than it was a disappointing loss. But since that point, Tar Heels are 4-14. So the losing in and of itself is frustrating. But, Adam, I think the really frustrating thing is the way the Tar Heels are losing. And that is the mistakes, the penalties, the just not giving them the missed opportunities, just not giving themselves the best chance to win the game. I don't think there's any question that personnel-wise, the Tar Heels are younger and not as talented as far as proven talent than they were 2 years ago. But that's not the problem. The problem is that Carolina is not giving itself the best opportunity to win because of penalties, turnovers, although that was not in this particular game, mistakes. And those are maddening to see.
They really are. And it seems like people have kind of had a hard time knowing what to be the maddest about Saturday, which is never a good sign. And the score was not really that indicative, although it was a wide margin, of how one-sided the game was in the second half. The second half of the ECU game and the first half of the Cal game, just not much of anything positive. So that's 50% of the games that have been played so far this year. And people are rightfully frustrated by that. That's hard. It's hard when 50% of what you've seen so far is very frustrating. So I don't know. I don't know anything about East Carolina football. I find it hard to believe they played the same way against the Tar Heels that they did against A&T. But clearly, Carolina's still better than them, I think, on paper. But the scoreboard says it was 41-19. That's not a narrow margin.
I think, and I'm going to make this my UNC Healthcare Know Your Stats feature, brought to you by UNC Healthcare, My UNC Chart. Keep track of your stats with My UNC Chart. Visit myuncchart.org to sign up. I think a couple things really hurt the Tar Heels, just strictly the gameplay. One was not scoring touchdowns in the first half. They scored on 5 of their 6 possessions, but 4 of those were field goals. And that was killer because I think Carolina outplayed ECU in the first half and could have easily gone into halftime up like 31-14 or something. And instead they trailed 21-19. And so you're in this spot where you're thinking, is the Tar Heel offense, are they really going to be able, can they score on 5 of 6 possessions again? That's pretty good offense. Maybe they can, but that's hard to do, I think, for anybody. So when they were trailing after that half, where they had more than 300 yards of offense and had to settle for all those field goals, and by the way, credit Freeman Jones, he was the best player on the field for the Tar Heels on Saturday. He was consistent and good and made big kicks and kept them in the game. But when they were trailing that way, it felt a little troublesome. And they just didn't, I don't want to, I guess, execute what they were trying to do when they got down into the scoring area. And it wasn't as though they were just all of a sudden they became, you know, didn't know what they were doing, but, you know, missed a couple of easy passes. Just had a couple things that didn't quite go right that forced you to kick field goals. So that was a killer. The penalty on Tyler Powell, I thought, I know a lot of people have focused on the Antonio Williams targeting call as kind of one of the turning points of the game, and I do think it was an important moment in the game. But I thought the Tyler Powell personal foul was the biggest play of the game in a negative way because the Tar Heels had taken the lead. They were up 13-7. They had stopped East Carolina on a third down. And who knows, the Pirate, it would have been 4th and long. You know, East Carolina maybe has to try a long field goal. You know, you don't know what they're going to do because they're kind of in that gray area as far as the decision. But Tyler Powell hits Herring, the quarterback for ECU, late in a blatant shot, gives them the first down. East Carolina eventually scores, takes the lead. Carolina did get it back briefly, but I thought that was the difference in the game, that moment. Because instead of being able to build off some momentum, it reminded me of the Dalton penalty a year ago against Cal. And it's just a killer, killer penalty. And the penalty against Antonio Williams. Although I don't think that one is as blatant. I mean, that one to me was more in kind of the course of action. And clearly it became a scarier moment because of the way that the East Carolina player was very clearly injured and had to be taken off the field. And it was a scary moment. And you certainly hope that young man's okay. That one to me was more kind of in the course of the action. And Antonio Williams was trying to set a block and was trying to set a big block. And in today's football, that's hard. That's to do and get away with. And I don't mean get away with like you're trying to do something illegal. I mean, it's just that play is being eliminated from the game. But, Adam, that Tyler Powell penalty to me was the killer.
Everyone listening to this pod knew as soon as that penalty happened that A, East Carolina would then go down and score a touchdown, and B, we would be looking back on that play later saying that was important. And that's two penalties in two games that turned out to be critical on an upperclassman who knows better than doing that. I'm kind of on board with you about the targeting thing. That was in a heavy traffic with bodies kind of in unusual positions, and guys were getting tripped up and people were trying to avoid them and didn't do things. Was he trying to lay him out? Yes. Was he trying to hurt him by leading with the crown of his helmet or whatever the correct verbiage is? I don't think so. But by the rule, the right thing was done. The Tyler Powell play, I don't know why he was doing that. I understand why Antonio Williams was doing what he was doing. I don't understand why Tyler Powell was doing what he was doing. Mm-hmm. It was third and 22 or whatever it was. The play was over. It was done.
Yep.
It was done. Carolina had held. East Carolina was going to have to make a tough decision. Great job. Everybody get off the field as quick as you can. And it's mystifying as to why. And I almost think I'd feel differently if it was like some freshman who hadn't played very much and he's out there hustling and trying to make a play for the defense. I almost think that's even different. But this is an upperclassman who you've gotta get more savvy out of than that. Now, did he do it thinking, well, this will probably allow East Carolina to score a touchdown? Let me go see if I can push him out of bounds. No, I don't think so. But you just have to know better, and you have to be taught better. And it just feels like it's happened too much. And I really think that's what has people frustrated. It's not so much the, oh, man, Carolina really can't run the ball or something like that, something X and O's based. It's more those kind of plays that it seems like people are talking about every week. And it's been a difficult start. I mean, if you go back and listen to what we said about these first two games in July and August and how important they would be, and now we see how they've played out, the rest of the year is going to be a challenge. Now, people don't want to hear this. A lot of guys have missed games. Mm-hmm. Now, part of that is self-inflicted.
Yep.
Which I think is another layer of people's frustration. I think if you take out the summertime shoe issue, people would still be frustrated, but not as frustrated. It feels like that was another chip in people just kind of building up their frustration. And so you can say, well, a lot of players are missing. Well, partially for their own reasons, but like Michael Carter, that's not why he's missing. He would have been nice to have when Antonio Williams went out.
Yep.
So it certainly was just a horrible combination of events and afternoon.
Yeah, there have been, and again, nobody wants to hear this, but Carolina was out a couple of key players. I mean, it would be great to have Michael Carter back. Carolina defensively clearly was not as good as they were in the first week, and they were also without, I think, arguably their three best defenders, or three of their best, in Malik Carney, self-inflicted. Aaron Crawford, still injured. Miles Dorn, injured. And so, but that's not the reason. It's just throw that in the pot of everything that's cooking. But it's just another thing that is adding to the problems right now. Couple things. You mentioned the run game. I thought it was stunning how when Antonio Williams went out, Carolina's running attack suddenly fizzled. Jordan Brown, I think, is a solid back. I don't think Jordan Brown was – the holes weren't as big after the Antonio Williams incident as they were before. Now, it would have been nice to have Antonio Williams. He was having a terrific game and clearly, I do think, is a talented running back. But that, I thought, was in a pure why-did-it-happen-on-the-field mode, Carolina's inability to move the football and particularly their inability to run the ball after really doing it at will for the first quarter and then probably three quarters of the second quarter. Carolina was running the ball anytime they wanted to, and I thought that was one of the reasons why they were successful. You know, Nathan Elliott right now is just not as accurate as he wants to be and as the Tar Heels need him to be. And, you know, 22 of 38 in this game for 219 yards in total. And 22 of 38 itself, 58%, is not awful. But I think some of the throws that were missed are ones that he would tell you that need to be completed. He had some guys open. Some of that, I think, was part of the reason why Carolina ended up having to kick field goals is they missed some open guys. And, you know, Larry, and talking to Coach Fedora about it, yeah, he said kind of mechanically the issues with Elliott's feet when he is inaccurate, that he's not getting his base the way that it needs to be. But kind of bigger picture, he said he thinks right now that Nathan is so worried about making a mistake that he's almost being too careful in what he's doing. And not just kind of playing the position. Now I think another interesting part of that is how you handle Cade Fortin, because he came in and while raw, I think you can see the pure potential that is there with Cade Fortin as far as his arm strength. He had a 17-yard run. He is a talented young guy. And so I think what comes into play now, particularly over these next 2 weeks before Chaz Surratt comes back, is how involved is Cade Fortin at that quarterback position. And Larry Fedora has said he wants him to continue to play. So how much, though? Because let's say he plays these next two games and then Surratt comes back, and if Fortin's been up and down, which you probably expect he would be, you can still redshirt him because of the new rule. You can play four games in redshirt. So he's played one. So he can play the next two, play extensively, and maybe he's great. And then you've got a whole nother option there at quarterback. Maybe he struggles. And you go, you know what? That's expected as a freshman. Surratt's back. We're going to roll with Surratt and Elliott the rest of the year. And those two guys we're going to see which one of those two gives you the best opportunity. But I do think these next two games are going to be interesting to see how the Heels handle that position, because I think they have different options there.
You mentioned the running game first. Part of the problem was the Tar Heels didn't try to run it that much. Even before the game got out of hand, it felt like, and I know some of the short passes are essentially runs in how they're designed and what they're designed to do. But two of the runs, of course, that were credited for the most, for the biggest losses were the two bad snaps. So I think that left with, like, after Antonio Williams went out, I think there were eight runs in about the next 30-ish snaps. Well, it's not like the passing game was cooking.
Right.
And so, I don't know. The quarterback issue is an issue. And I think everyone seems to agree Nathan Elliott has the leadership and the moxie and the understanding and intelligence to play the position. But right now, I think even he would say he's not playing it to his standards. And so why not? Is there something else Carolina can do scheme-wise? Is there something else they can do personnel-wise to try to help him a little more? I don't think it helped him working with an unfamiliar center. That's another one of those things people don't want to hear about.
Yeah, J.J. McCargo unavailable for this game, and so Jonathan Troll is a walk-on, and that's fine, but it's a fact. Senior walk-on came in, and I thought did okay, but had those two mistakes, and one of them was a big one. I mean, it was still when the game was really close and really put the Tar Heels in a bad spot offensively.
So it's just hard to know. I think you have to identify what are team problems with this year's 2018 Tar Heels, and you have to separate those from what are program problems. What have you seen consistently that has been a consistent problem? Which I think we can agree penalties would go in that bucket. Mm-hmm. Team problems is things like quarterback and what are you going to do about the running game? And you would think the team problems would be easier to fix. But none of them are easy to fix, or else it would have been done already.
And, of course, all this leads to Larry Fedora, who said, you know, that he – you know, Larry Fedora's been coach a long time, and head coach and an assistant coach, and he's done it at high school, and he's done it at non-Power 5 schools, and he's done it at Power 5 schools. And, yeah, he has a bank of experience to pull from. And this is not the first time that he has faced adversity. It's not the first time he's faced adversity at Carolina. And he said, you know, yes, that you do rely. I talked to him today, and he said that he believes in his plot, that he believes his philosophy is sound, which, of course, you have to when you're a head coach, and that it's not – you don't throw everything away and say, nope, we got to change what we're doing to get where we want to go. Because that he's gotten to this point with that philosophy. Now, he said also that doesn't mean that you don't assess and that you don't adjust and you don't tweak and you don't think about personnel issues and things like you just talked about. Of course, you have to. You have to put the best personnel in the best positions to have a chance to be successful. That's your job as a coach. So that's something that he's certainly going to do. And I do think this is going to be a noisy week. And it's going to be a noisy week from outside the program, from some unpleasant things, and then just something like the weather. I mean, that's just another noisy thing. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. And so how Larry Fedora, his staff, and his team stay together, I think, is going to be important and something that will determine their ability to have success through the rest of this year.
And I think it's important to think about, this is another thing no one wants to hear about. Carolina's lucky because a lot of people care about how its various sports teams do. And that's a great problem to have, and almost every other school in the country would like to have that. And so nobody's saying don't care, because that's great and it's a big asset. The way you care makes a big difference. And I would just ask people to think about when we had Matt Doherty on last week. Hmm. And he talked about some of the things he went through when he was here. And everybody sort of, I'm sure, thought to themselves, ho-ho, that was so long ago when we all did foolish things and said things we regret. Well, it's entirely possible, if not today, at some point in the next few years, we will certainly be in that situation again, in some form or fashion, with some coach somewhere. And so whatever you thought when you listened to Matt Doherty and when you thought about kind of how you felt at the time it was happening, and if you felt like you knew more once you heard him say some of the things that were going on that maybe you didn't know, I would ask you to kind of let that shape how, not how much you care about this, but about how you react to it and how you treat the people involved and just sort of how you speak about it in public and to people you care about. And that doesn't mean you can't say that stunk losing 41-19 to East Carolina, because it did. It did. It stunk losing at home in basketball to Hampton. That wasn't fun either. What's different is when you say, that stunk, and fill in the blank person is clearly a moron who doesn't care, doesn't know what he's doing, is just in it for this or that. That's different. And just bear in mind, 15 years from now, we may have the chance to, you know, on the hologram podcast, when we're like projected into your living room, we might have someone on who might tell you some things that have gone on that you say, well, if I had known that, I might have felt differently.
Tell you, it is, it always is down when you lose, of course. That was as down a locker room area as I can remember in some time for the Tar Heels. And Brian Simmons brought up a good point, which you, to your point, you kind of sometimes forget about. Just talking about the players, and he said, don't forget how hard they've been working. And we talked about it in training camp. You know, but through the summer, through grinding through fall camp, just all that stuff, they want to win. And so hopefully that they're going to start doing that and start doing that very soon. Okay. Adam, why don't we – let's talk about this weekend a little bit. And like I said, we're going to have Rick on. While we have not spoken, I'm going to give you a little behind-the-curtain look here. So Adam and I are recording right now. We have not yet spoken to Rick. I'm going to do that later today and kind of put it in the podcast later. So we haven't.
I thought Rick made some great points.
Yeah,
Jones.
That's right. What a smart, sharp guy. So what we say now may contradict something that Rick says or something like that, but that's the reason why. But Adam, right now, I think there is serious question as to whether or not this game is going to be played on Saturday. And again, we are recording this on Monday afternoon. You're hearing it on Tuesday. Every indication is that this weather is a serious, life-altering, dangerous situation. And so I think that the number one concern, of course, is going to be the safety of your fans, the safety of the people working at the stadium, the safety of the players, coaches, the other team. That has to be your number one concern, and it is. I do think, my personal opinion, if Carolina could do the 2016 situation over again with Virginia Tech, regardless of the outcome of the game, and the Hokies won the game convincingly. Regardless of the outcome of that game, I think if Carolina had to do it again, it wouldn't have played. Not because of what happened on the field, but because of the situations just around the stadium. Not that, to my knowledge, anyone got seriously hurt. You know, I don't know of that happening. But I think the probability of that happening that day was higher than you ever want it to be when you're asking people to come to your campus and play a game or watch you play a game. So, again, not in because I have talked to Bubba Cunningham about this other than he has publicly even said that, you know, he really has studied and evaluated how they handled that. I think if Carolina could do that again, that they wouldn't do it, and I think that's going to play into their consideration for what they do this week.
If it doesn't play in, well,
right.
It will play in.
Yeah, I mean,
it will.
That's life. You take right. that experience and say, you know what? It is applicable to what I am talking about right now. I am going to use that experience to help shape my judgment on this one.
I rarely, if ever, have heard anyone say after the Virginia Tech game, you know what? That wasn't that bad. It worked out fine.
Yeah.
No one has said that. If they had said that, I think this weekend would be different. Now, it's weather, and so it could just all of a sudden like turn away and go out into the ocean, and it could be sunny and 72 on Saturday. It doesn't look like that's going to be the case. That's what I hope is the case. Mm-hmm. But it's a football game. And, you know, another little minor detail that doesn't really matter, but it is a detail, it's a non-conference football game. You don't have to play it.
I think, yeah. I think two things. if the worst thing that happens is you postpone or outright cancel this game, and it turns out that you could have played it, are you going to take some heat? Probably a little bit. But that heat is much more worth taking than somebody gets seriously injured because you tried to play the game and something happened, in my opinion. Again, I'm not on the committee making this decision. Secondarily, and again, hadn't talked to Rick yet. He's hopefully going to clear this up when we talk to him, and you'll hear that after our discussion on this. I think it's important that Carolina makes this decision early. And that when you make a decision early, it raises the likelihood that you get it wrong. I understand that. But I think with the seriousness that this situation appears at this moment to hold, the gravity of this situation that it appears to hold, I think you've got to make this decision soon.
And there's all kinds of logistical issues
right.
that go into Central Florida being in town on Saturday at noon to play a game. You're talking about 100 hotel rooms or so. Do you want an out-of-town football team taking those up, or do you want people who might need a place to go?
That's good. I hadn't even thought about that. That's a good point.
You've got air travel. You've got buses. You've got – what about – think about walking around Keenan Stadium on a typical day and all the policemen and first responder-type folks that you see, paramedics. Is that where you want them to be on Saturday, or do you want them to be somewhere else? I love having them there at Keenan Stadium. You can't have the game without them, but I feel like there may be more important things going on if things hold the way
right.
they are.
And again, as Adam said, this is weather. It is as unpredictable as anything, but the language that is being used by the people who know the National Weather Service, things like that, is extraordinarily serious language, and I think it's to be taken seriously by everybody in the state, and I'm sure it will be by the folks here at UNC.
Well, and as you said, there's going to be some blowback no matter what.
It's always the case.
And on a much lesser scale, it's what we talked about with the individual seats. If you don't put them in because you're worried people are going to say, oh, look at them, they decreased their capacity, those same people are going to complain no matter what. If you don't fill the seats, they're going to say, oh, look, they're not filled. Same thing's going to happen on Saturday. If you, no matter what you decide, play the game on Tuesday at noon, play the game on Saturday, don't ever play the game somewhere else, whatever you decide, some people are going to complain. So you can't make the decision based on, well, are there going to be any negative thoughts or feelings about this? I can save you the time. Yes,
yep.
There are going to be. So take that part out and just decide what the best thing to do is.
And again, I mean, neither Adam nor I is going to have any say in this, but I am confident that Carolina is going to make the wise decision here, whatever they deem that to be. And again, we'll talk to Rick, and we're going to get a little closer look because Rick is going to be part of that group that is making that decision. So why don't we do that? We're going to send it to that interview. Again, this is an interview that Adam and I do in the future, but you're going to hear it in the present. And it's going to be informative. So let's go to that interview with Rick Steinbach. Well, Adam and I said that we had an interview coming up with Rick Steinbacher. And while that would have been glorious enough, we decided to beef it up even more. So I'm having the opportunity now to sit down with not one associate AD here at Carolina, Rick Steinbacher, but another as well, associate AD John Bruner. Guys, how are you both doing?
Doing great.
John, he said you were beefing it up, not me. I just want to point that out.
So Rick has been on before. I think everybody is aware of Rick. John, everyone should be aware of you. They may not be. Tell us a little bit about what you do, what your role is here at Carolina before we get going.
So it's my privilege to help support our event staff, which supports all 250 plus or minus home events we host every year, for everything from basketball down to rowing.
So John is a busy man, particularly as we move through the school year. So, guys, of course, big event, weather event on the horizon, unfortunately, it appears, for the state of North Carolina with Hurricane Florence. Lot of athletic events going on around Chapel Hill here later in the week that could potentially be affected. Rick, I'll start with you. Kind of when did you guys become aware that this was something that you needed to start taking a look at? And what have you guys kind of done as a unit, who all has been involved, to try to start trying to figure this thing out?
Sure. Yeah, Jones, believe it or not, the first time I became aware of it is Central Florida emailed me.
Huh.
David Hansen, who's their deputy AD, he and I worked together to put the game contract in place. And he's been through this a number of times. He was at Southern sure. Miss when Katrina went there. And obviously in Orlando, they've dealt with this a couple of times the last couple of years. So he sent me an email like last, I don't know, Wednesday or Thursday, saying, hey, have you looked at this hurricane? I said, no, I haven't. I sent it to John, and John said, oh, yeah, we need to be looking at that hurricane. So that was kind of when we first started talking about it. Yeah, we've got 5 home events this weekend.
Yeah.
We've got 7 away events. 4 of those 7 away events are in North Carolina. So obviously there's a lot to discuss and decide relative to the football game, but we got a whole bunch of other teams competing this weekend that we need to think about as well. So, you know, as of right now, we are scheduling and preparing as though everything's going to happen. That said, looking at the forecast, if that forecast doesn't change, we're going to have to make some adjustments, perhaps some really significant ones for all those events that are happening this weekend.
John, who are you guys in talks with? Who are you collaborating with to make sure that you have the latest information and make sure that you guys can make the most informed decision?
Well, you become a almost professional meteorologist in the event business. And so we triangulate resources. We have our own weather meteorology service. We combine that with the National Weather Service. We have an outstanding emergency management director named Daryl Jeter, and he came on board late last fall, and he's been wonderful to integrate a more deliberate process with all university events. So dealing with some of the snow events we had earlier this year, and then this is the first weather event we've had this academic year. And so we started a conversation late last week and have had 3 actually meetings today alone. So there was an initial call with a working group for adverse weather, and then there was a more deliberate advisory group, and then we suggest certain things to the chancellor's level, and then they'll make the ultimate determination. That's everything having to do with classes, other events, whether it's Playmakers or Carolina Performing Arts, Campus Recreation, even the chancellor's office. We had a planned dedication of the Carolina Field Hockey Stadium, which the Chancellor's Office is going to lead. They've had to consider changing that as well. So it's a very deliberate, engaged process, and try to get as many inputs as possible so we're all kind of on the same page.
I just don't know the answer to this. Is there any government involved? Like, I mean, the state of North Carolina, are you in talks with them? Can they give you recommendations or mandates or anything like that, or is this totally separate from what they're doing?
So the governor did declare a state of emergency
right.
last week in preparation, and that's a heightened state, but also helps with resource allocation and recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Orange County, we're in the jurisdiction of Orange County. They're getting ready to declare a state of emergency to prepare for this. And then the town of Chapel Hill, and we can't do that. We're not a political entity, but we're kind of falling under their guidelines. And so it's not mandated that we follow that necessarily, but it's certainly obviously influences our decision making.
Sure. Rick, it seems like, and Adam and I were talking about this before we came to this part of the podcast, that it seems like this has changed in recent years. It used to be, man, if you can get the players to the game, you should play the game because that's when the game is scheduled. It feels like that has changed maybe in the last, I'll say, 10 years, just to pick a number. Do you guys feel that way too? Has this process changed in recent years?
Absolutely. I do think the sentiment 10, 15 years ago was, if you can get both teams to the arena and get the officials there and it's safe, you play the game, no
right.
matter what's going on outside or around an outdoor stadium. I do think that's changed. I think people have realized that when you play these games, there's large crowds there. Large crowds demand police protection, traffic support, working stoplights.
Yeah.
So I think everyone is much, much more. Everyone was always worried about the safety of everybody, but the mentality was, let's play the game so long as the participants can get there safely. I think now it's much more, let's play the game if the participants and the officials can get there safely, but let's make sure we're also considering the safety of the fans getting to and from the game. And unfortunately, in a forecast like we're looking at right now, if it does hold true, it's going to have major impacts on the entire state of North
yeah.
Carolina. So for us to be using resources to support a game when those resources need to be helping people get their power back or recover from a flood situation, I think that weighs into it much more heavily now than it used to.
John, how many people are just in ballpark? I know you may not know right off the top of your head, but for a football game, how many other people are involved? Concession people, police? I mean, just do you have an idea how many other people, staff, are involved?
So directly, it's pretty close to 2,000.
Wow.
And that doesn't include some of the hotel support and some of the other transportation that we're not really in charge of.
Sure.
But it is a really big group. And to kind of supplement what Rick had said, we have a new strategic plan. And one of the focuses is integrating ourselves in the Carolina campus community. And so to even further that, you know, athletics are an important part of it, the UNC Chapel Hill community. However,
sure,
they're just a part of it. And so, you know, some of the other voices that we consider are just general facilities, and they're the ones that support all campus facilities. Research, we have $1 billion in research that we support. Transportation and parking, energy services, student affairs, auxiliary services. So they're providing energy, they're providing those campus stores, and they're the ones feeding everyone. So you got to be cognizant of that. And then we're in the town of Chapel Hill. We've got a huge, wonderful healthcare system, the hospital. That's a huge consideration that we always have to take into effect. And then some of those special events that I alluded to.
Are you guys talking to other – because I know other schools out of state has a home game. There's other schools that I'm sure have events. Are you in contact with other schools, and does it matter what they do? Does that – do you guys try to do something together, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, we are. John, myself, Bubba, and a few others participated in a conference call earlier today with John Swofford, with Michael Strickland, who's the Senior Associate Commissioner for Football.
Yeah.
All of the ACC schools that are have any potential of being impacted by Hurricane Florence were on that call. And it was really, really helpful. They obviously just shared the weather forecast that they have, which was identical to the one that we have. And then they had each school just go through, what are you thinking? And it was helpful just to hear the thoughts that everybody else was going through. Bubba has spoken with Debbie Yao at NC State. I have spoken with Michael Lippitz, who is the scheduler for football at NC State, one of their deputy ADs. So, yeah, we do talk to them a lot. You know, again, it's the same things that John was saying. If NC State plays a football game, if Carolina plays a football game, and we're almost in an identical forecast situation, obviously, because we're so close to each other, it has a massive impact on the state of North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
So we are making sure that we're talking to them. Doesn't mean we'll make the same decision, but it's just we're communicating with them, making sure we're considering what they're considering, and vice versa.
So we're talking late Monday. People are going to start hearing this early Tuesday. Do you have a hope for when you will be able to make a decision and let people know?
The timeline we've talked about is trying to decide ideally Wednesday afternoon or Wednesday evening. Absolutely no later than noon on Thursday. You know, why would that happen? If the weather forecast improved significantly,
sure,
and we needed a little bit more time to see if it improved even more, we would possibly wait that extra time. But as John mentioned, there's so many more people involved in it than just athletics. So I think if it was up to Justin Athletics, we'd decide Wednesday night or Thursday by noon at the latest. Depending on how the forecast goes tonight and tomorrow, we may be asked to make a decision sooner. And obviously, we'll take that into consideration, along with all of what John said about how much we are a part of the university and the state overall.
I have two more questions, and let you guys just say whatever you want to say to kind of finish it up. But who ultimately is making this choice? Is it kind of the committee gives their recommendations to Bubba, and he makes the call, or how does this ultimately get decided?
So we do operate in a collaborative
sure
process. We try to get everyone to feel good about the decisions. And to Rick's point, you know, it's just one part of the community, but it is the biggest event we host every year, the, you know, football games. It's important symbolically. It's important economically. It's important for the community as well. So those decisions aren't made lightly. And ultimately, you know, the chancellor's the in charge of the university,
sure,
and Bubba's in charge of the athletic department. So it rests with those two.
Rick and John, I can't remember if you were back in this role yet when this happened or not, so if you were, please chime in. But Rick, of course, we had the game against Virginia Tech a couple years ago with Hurricane Matthew, and it was just a messy day, regardless of what happened on the field, which it didn't go the way the Tar Heels wanted. It was a scary day just with the weather. Has the decision to play that day, looking back on it, do you think you made the right decision that day? And has that experience shaped you guys at all for how you're approaching this particular event?
Yeah, I think it absolutely has, Jones. That's one of the things that Bubba's great about. Always learn.
Yeah.
Every decision you make, analyze it. Did you make the right decision? Did you make the wrong decision? Whether it was right or wrong, what can you learn from it? And I think we have done that. Matthew was a lot different. Mm-hmm. the forecast was it was going to make landfall, and then it was going to take a pretty significant, I believe, left turn. We were told that when we played that game, and it was, a, I believe it was a 3:30 game, we were going to be looking at steady rain and 10 to 15 mile an hour winds. Matthew made landfall, and Matthew did not turn.
No, yeah.
It came right, right at us. And instead of steady rain and 15 mile an hour winds, we were in a driving downpour, and gosh, I think we had 20, 30 mile an hour winds. So absolutely, if we would have known that the forecast was not accurate, we would not have played that game.
Sure.
The learnings that really Bubba talked a lot about was we felt like we kind of made a binary decision that time. We were like, can we play or not? This time we've actually laid out 7 or 8 different scenarios or options. Some of them are probably not very viable, but half of them are of, you know, playing on Saturday, possibly playing on Sunday, a couple other different options. Certainly canceling is something that could be considered with the forecast. So we're trying to look at it instead of, are we going to play or not? What are all the different options that we can select from once we get a forecast update tomorrow and then as late as Wednesday or even Thursday morning? So that was the big learning. I think the other one was, and that's part of the reasons why Bubba's already talked to Debbie Yao. I've already talked to Michael Lippitz at NC State. You know, we had us at home that weekend. We had Duke at home. We had NC State at home that weekend. And I don't know that we were talking directly, sharing what we were thinking and what information we had. So instead of collaborating on what we were dealing with, it was more, well, if they're going to play, we're going to play. So I think those are the two big learnings that we've taken into it this year.
And Jones, I was not with the athletic department at the time. I took an opportunity to town of Chapel Hill, but it was really interesting to get the overall perspective of a hurricane event happening to the community, mm-hmm. and how important that football game was. And I want to give a shout out to our facility staff. Watching that game on TV, the field held up incredibly well. It just looked like it was rainy. And obviously the conditions were tough, but compared to some of the other community, other schools in the area, their field didn't really look as well and operate as well. So it was interesting to get that perspective.
Anything else that you think Tar Heel fans should know about this event? Obviously, we all hope it's 70 degrees and sunny and we get to do all these cool things that you guys have been planning to do when Carolina finally gets to play a home game. But anything else that Carolina fans need to know as we go through what I'm sure will be a very stressful week?
Yes, two things. Football game days in Keenan Stadium are awesome. We want to play Saturday. So if any Tar Heel fan out there can either pray or do a rain dance or do something, call in a favor with a higher authority and get that hurricane to, I don't know, John, slow down, speed up, or make a hard 90-degree right, that'd be fantastic.
That'd be the best. Just get out of here completely, right?
And, again, I want to reiterate it. You're right. We're recording it now. Folks will probably hear it on Tuesday. We have not made a decision yet. I mean, as of right now, my mind is we're playing a football game on Saturday, and it's going to be an awesome day in Keenan Stadium. We will announce things as soon as decisions are made, and we'll make the decisions as soon as we can based on the information that we have, and we'll get it out as broadly as we can, GoHeels.com, social media, all those different places.
Awesome. Guys, thank you very much. Best of luck as you work through this not very pleasant situation this week, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you, Jones.
So, a lot more certainly to happen this week. Keep an eye on just for the football game itself, GoHeels.com, all your social media outlets that you get your Carolina news, you will get that information. But certainly on the greater scale, and if you're in North Carolina, please take this seriously. It is it looks like just a monster storm right now, and unless there is a severe change of forecast, it looks like it is going to impact the state in a big way, some way. So we'll have to wait and see.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does it seem like there's more of these incidents now than there were 20 years ago, or am I just more aware of them now? I'm not talking about hurricanes. I'm talking about, for example, college football games being delayed and or postponed. I don't remember that ever happening until 2001, the 9/11 game against SMU.
Yeah, SMU.
That was moved to the end of the season. That wasn't even weather. But now it seems like every weekend there's a game that's delayed. Do we just have more information now and so we can make smarter decisions? Or are we all about to just blow up in a big ball of fire? What is going on?
I think, and we don't need to get into a climate discussion here,
no,
Adam.
I don't know enough about it to even talk about it.
But I do think, the availability of information, just like, and this is maybe a bad correlation, But just like Antonio Williams would not have been thrown out of that game against East Carolina 20 years ago.
It would have gone on a highlight video.
Right. But it's not 20 years ago anymore. And you, as an institution, can't afford – you can't. You I think it always used to be, and you know this, if the players and the officials can get there, we're going to play the game. No matter what, because this game has to get played. And I think at some point that there's been a higher thought process to it of, okay, one, is it even possible to play the game? That's the players and the officials part. But number two, I think now it's, should we play the game? And that opens up everything to a lot more interpretation. But I think that gray area has to be explored. I don't think in today's world that you can say, well, I mean, we've got our side judge here and the quarterback's here. I mean, why wouldn't we play this? Sure, there's trees down. Sure that, you know, a third of the state just got absolutely ravaged. Sure, I mean, you can't that doesn't fly anymore. Nor should it, I think. Because and not just the legal cover your backside part of it.
Although that is part of it.
Of course that's part of it. But not just that part of it, but just the common sense part of it. I think.
I think in today's world that Maryland snow game where had the great
Adam, it shouldn't have happened when it did happen. You know that just like I do. There's no way it should have happened.
Yeah.
It was dangerous. It was.
Anyway. That's still one of the all-time great stories, though, that entire weekend. One day on the pod.
It was 30-plus inches of snow. More than 30 inches of snow. Anyway.
All Big Grizz wanted to do was see Avatar.
All he wanted to do was see Avatar. And it said that Avatar was playing.
He called them, and they told him it was going to be showing a half hour from then. Lace up your boots and get out there.
Everybody on the coast, be careful, especially, not especially, but including our friends at Myrtle Beach. You can go to visitmyrtlebeach.com, help make your trip to the coast as successful and fun as ever. But holy cow, if you live on the coast, be careful, be smart. Don't be macho. Don't do something dumb.
Don't have a hurricane party. I've never understood that. You never hear of anyone saying, I think I'm going to have a tornado party.
Well, you know what? And I grew up on the coast. And I know. I get it. You know, that you hear about all these hurricanes and rarely do they deliver the negative impact that you're warned for. But it's not worth it. It just isn't. And that concludes our old man podcast. Okay. Adam, do you have a list, sir?
I do.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
I just have a couple things on my list. While we're talking about actual real-life things that are serious and difficult, today is 9/11. Mm. So that always makes me think of Ryan Cohart, the Carolina men's lacrosse alum who was in the 9/11 attacks. Friends and family of Ryan did a scholarship in his name at the Rams Club, which last time I heard was over $150,000, I think, which is incredible. So, of course, everyone will be thinking about that today, although it blows my mind that, for example, my kids don't really understand.
17 years ago, is that right?
Yeah. They really, like, it's like I'm talking about the Kennedy assassination when I tell them.
I really think it's the most impactful event that has happened in my lifetime, right? I mean, just kind of like globally news. And the Kennedy assassination is a good, I mean, people of that era say they know exactly where they were, they remember what happened, and I think that's the case for people of our era with September 11th.
Yeah, I think the only thing in the ballpark is the Challenger, but it didn't have I don't the far-reaching ripples that I think 9/11 had. It feels like again, not an area in which I'm qualified to speak.
No,
but that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a way to commemorate 9/11 or to tell the friends and family of Ryan Cohart you remember him, call the Rams Club. Sue Walsh can help you do that. Really worthwhile cause, but certainly everybody's got their own way to remember a day like that, which, I mean, as we talked about, even had an impact on Carolina football and everything.
Yeah.
Everything in the world that was around that day was impacted by that.
Yep.
Not as important things. I went to basketball conditioning last week.
Oh!
And it kind of speaks to what you said about the football team, about how, you know, when things go bad, everybody wants to say, I could tell in their faces they didn't really care. And at some point this year, the basketball team will lose a game. And you know as well as I do, we'll get an email that says, like, I fill in the blank player looked like he wasn't unhappy enough on the bench, so I'm pretty sure that I care more than him. If you think you cared more than them, you should have come out to the Meadowmont Hills on one day last week and run up those hills in the sweltering temperatures because it was miserable.
I bet.
And all I did was stand there. But I was hot,
look,
Jones.
I sweated through my polo.
Yeah.
Garrison Brooks, I know you were out there running, but whatever.
I had to unbutton my top two buttons of my polo because I was working so hard. I don't mind. I had to go find a shady spot. But I was impressed with the senior leadership in the conditioning aspect. It was clear who the leaders were. It was Cam Johnson, Luke May, Kenny Williams. It was they led everything from being first physically in the runs to cheering on the guys who were struggling to encouraging their teammates to breaking the team down in the huddle after they were finished. And I think people, outside people, not wise podcast listeners,
sure,
are going to underrate how valuable it is to have three really good what's the ruling on Cam Johnson? Can we refer to it as three seniors, or do we have to say two seniors and a graduate student?
Oh, no, I'm all in on senior.
Okay, good. That's so much easier.
I'm all in, yeah.
Okay. They're going to underrate how valuable it is to have three seniors who not just are leaders, but who play. And so they're going to be doing that leading on the court. And so I hereby deem that Carolina should receive a plus two or three in every preseason ranking you see because people are going to underrate that and just look at, well, here on paper, from the McDonald's All-American Combine, the numbers say this. The unofficial numbers say the leadership will be important.
I'm excited about basketball. I don't mean that in a negative way towards football and a long way to go, but I'm excited for this year.
One of the freshmen went down during the running.
Why would you even say that, Adam?
Well,
why would you scare us like that?
And by went down, I don't mean like it. I mean like it's running up a hill.
Right.
So you're going to fall down at
some
point. And so he went down. He was limping a little. Doug Halverson came to check him out and do all his Doug Halverson things.
Yep.
I'll tell you how hot it was. Doug wasn't wearing a sweater vest.
Oh, come on now.
Yeah, that's how hot it was. And so Doug checked him out, and this freshman, I think he sort of had the opportunity to, like, can you go? Yes, he wants to go. Won the next sprint.
Nice.
You'll be reading about that in a column sometime this season.
So, anything else on the list? Because I have a how can you justify that.
I've got a what up.
Oh. I do too, by the way.
I'd like to give a what up to Christina Goodson and Wesley Bradford, who I better having a very stressful week. Wesley Bradford is a big-time pod listener. They're getting married this weekend, I think, in the Triangle area. Could be a little dicey, but good luck to both of you.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Appreciate you listening to the pod. And just wanted to, especially to give Wesley, because I know he listens to every single episode. He might even be such a diehard that he slows it down to 0.5 speed so that he can listen for a longer period of time. What up to them?
I would like to give a couple, just what ups to all the Tar Heels who started pro football this week. Also including, did you see Romar Morris with like a 75-yard touchdown run up in Canada?
For the Calgary Stampeders?
I think that's who it was? I think so. So good to see, and I know the CFL's been going on. It's not the beginning of their season. They've been going. But, I know Bears fans are sad, but I thought Mitch Trubisky looked pretty good. I didn't think – the reason the Bears gave up that lead was not Mitch Trubisky. I thought he looked a little more comfortable in what he was doing compared to from year one to year two. So just great to see. Bummer to see Mac Collins on the injured reserve for Philadelphia. Ryan Switzer in the mix for the Steelers. That was a wild game with them and the Browns. Couple different Tar Heels on the Panthers, Julius Peppers and Denoris Searcy. Also Elijah Hood, who's on the injured reserve. But just a what up to all those guys as they move through the year.
What do you think it was like for Ryan Switzer to go back to return punts for the team he grew up cheering for?
I know. In those conditions, too, it was rainy and nasty. I bet that was stressful. Every time we were watching that game, and I have nothing against the Steelers, but my son, I was like, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing the Browns win. I was like, I want Ryan to do well, but I wouldn't mind if the Browns win. And this, my son couldn't wrap his head around this thought process.
Let me ask you this. Do you play fantasy football?
No. Well, I'm not allowed to, Adam, as a member of as a full-time employee of the University of North Carolina. So why would I?
Even like for
no,
for,
oh no,
for
no, that's
fun?
That's gambling, brah.
Oh, okay. Well, then this won't be as relevant to you. I'm amazed by fantasy football.
No,
like my son is a Green Bay Packers fan for no explainable reason.
Right.
And he was very conflicted during that Packers-Bears game.
Because he wanted his guys to do well.
Because the team he was playing had Aaron Rodgers on it.
Mm.
And so he had to go to bed at halftime when things weren't going so well for the Packers. And he was like, well, I'm sad that the Packers are losing.
Did you wake him up with the bad news?
Yeah, I did. On Monday morning, I was like, I got really great news and really terrible news. Your team won in real life, but your imaginary team that isn't a real team got stomped due to Aaron Rodgers.
I tell you what, not that this has anything to do with Aaron Rodgers, incredible. I mean, I wanted the Bears to win because I wanted it for Mr. Trubisky, but, I mean, that one throw that he made down the sideline, I mean, come on, dude. That dude's crazy talented. I like Aaron Rodgers for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know him. Surprisingly, we're not friends. He has no tie to Carol. I mean, nothing. But I kind of like him.
I think he's like everyone who's in the top 0.01% of what they do. A little weird.
Yeah.
But probably an okay guy.
He seems
it's like you with radio. Like you're in the top 0.01%.
Right. Yeah, of course.
A little weird.
Right. Yeah.
But still fun to like do a podcast with.
He seems. I don't know. He seems more like a normal person than some others to me. Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Adam, by the way, those what-ups brought to you by our friends at StubHub. Whether your favorite seat is right on the 50-yard line, comes with a bird's-eye view, head to StubHub, grab tickets. StubHub is the official fan-to-fan ticket marketplace of Carolina Athletics. StubHub, be there. Don't forget, we're also brought to you by the Pinehurst Resort, home of the Cradle, 9-hole short course designed for all players. Cradle is free to play for kids 17 and under when with an adult. Do you have and how can you justify that?
No.
I, sir, do. I do not have to justify.
How can you justify what you've done? How can you justify
sacrifice and honor? How can you possibly justify that?
This, how can you justify that, Adam, goes, as it so often does, to me.
Oh.
I even wrote a little note to myself to not forget this. The note says, HT self-check. Now, there's a popular grocery store
right
out there in the land. Not as popular as Publix, I'm sure, a proud sponsor of the Tar Heels.
Right.
But I was at said grocery store. I am a firm believer, Adam, in the self-checkout.
Yes, 100%.
I think it makes things faster.
Yes.
I like the option. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to go there if I have 40 items.
I will.
Oh, wow.
I'll do that.
You'll do the, yes, like, full, like, shopping for 2 weeks worth of groceries, still go to the self-check.
Well, I've never been to the grocery store under those conditions. But I am so confident in my ability to self-scan,
yeah,
that I believe I can self-scan that many items faster than the paid professional.
The only thing that normally gets me, Adam, is I run out of bag space sometimes. You know how
I need more than that.
Yeah, I need more bag options because I can't. And then it starts yelling at you and acts like you haven't scanned it.
Yeah, like you're trying to steal.
Right.
I'm not a thief.
Right.
Look, I don't cheat. I'd rather lose than cheat.
So.
Sometimes you go and they only have space for two bags.
No, you got to have
at least.
That's
not enough.
Give me at least the four, but honestly, I need like 16.
I think at self-checkout, it should tell you how many bags there are there. Like this is the baby two-bag aisle.
Right.
But over here, we've got six.
I feel like eight's a good meal. Like eight, I feel like, would accommodate 95% of self-checkers.
But I think the reason they don't have eight is because then you're encouraging the idiots who can't even do like one bag's worth.
Right.
Then they're thinking they can get their 2 weeks of groceries in there.
Okay. I, like you, have full confidence in my self-checker.
Yeah, you have to.
The other day, I was at the grocery store, and I'm self-checking. Mm-hmm. Very important items that I have, Adam, are these four things. Toothpaste, mm-hmm. zinc, which I take ever since the Las Vegas trip.
Where are you still taking that?
Yeah, and I haven't gotten sick like that only one time since. Thank you, zinc. Thank you, element. And no big deal, buy one, get one free on, I believe it was 30 tablets of allergy medicine, which this type of year I like to do like a one little allergy pill a day just to keep the allergies away. Yeah. A pill a day keeps the allergies away.
So you had your medication and your toothpaste.
Correct.
Yeah.
So.
How that grocery trip would have been different just a few years ago.
So I scanned the toothpaste, boom, no problem. Mm-hmm. Scanned my zinc, obviously no problem there. Scan the first thing of allergy medicine, no problem. Then, Adam, I don't know what happened. I don't know if I was daydreaming, but I kind of was just kind of zoned out. And I'm sitting there and I'm doing this. And you can't see me, but I'm keeping, like, I keep trying to.
You're trying to find the barcode.
Yeah, trying to. But I'm not really looking at it real hard. I'm just kind of half in, half out, thinking about something else. And it's like, and it's not checking. But it hasn't even registered with me, really, that it's not checking. I'm just kind of sitting there. So, you know how they have, like, the babysitter of the self-check aisle.
Yeah.
So, this guy comes over to me, and he's like, sir? Clearly thinking that I am not confident or capable in my self-check abilities. He's like, sir? I think that barcode's on the top of that. And I was like, oh, so it is. Flip it over, check it, put it in the thing. So then, now, I just told you, I did buy one, get one free.
Right.
So I have two on my screen.
Right.
So this guy thinks so little of me that he then pulls open my bag, and he was like, sir, I'm just checking. It checked twice there on your screen. I want to make sure that you meant to buy two of them.
Did he offer you a senior discount by any chance?
So then I was like, oh, no, yes, thank you. I did mean to buy two. And he was like, all right, you're good to go. Just go ahead and pay.
Uh-oh.
Adam, I have paid a billion times in my life at the self-check.
Yep.
Somehow, I lost all. I'm like, I wanted to pay the credit card. And so I start to do it, and then I'm like, wait, no. And then I'm like, can't find the card button on the screen. Like, I look like the biggest self-check idiot of all time. So finally, I find it. Boop, okay, I hit it. All right, I have a chip in my card, as most people do at this point. I have inserted the chip in the chip reader, Adam, many times.
Right.
A grown man. I've inserted my chip. I try to insert the chip. I miss the chip thing. So, like, unfortunately, it's not like I did it so big that I came up and hit myself in the face or anything, but it's like I'm doing this and I can't get my card in the chip reader. And the guy's like, oh, sir, no, you just put it right there in the little slot at the bottom. And I was like, this guy is, as soon as I walk out, he's going to be like, yep, There's Captain Dummy again that I had to help here in the side. I don't even know why we have these self-check aisles. So, Adam, how can you justify that to me for my total lack of ability after a lifetime of successful self-checks, a totally unsuccessful and embarrassing self-check experience?
The babysitter didn't just, like, drop everything on the ground like the guy at the fast food, did he? And back away. Like.
No, I didn't scare him, fortunately. A mess.
I bet when you walked out, he called everyone together on the mic. He's like, psh, psh,
ah. He's like, gotta make sure we get that videotape for training in the future of how to handle dummies who can't do the self-check.
He was just waving his card around in the air. Did it give you your buy one, get one free?
I did get that.
I thought that's where we were headed, that he hadn't credited you, and then you had to ask the babysitter and, like, complete the triumvirate of old man things. Sure. I didn't get my coupons. I had to BOGO on this.
I remember once it was buy one, get one on, I think it was like a bag of like limes or something. I feel like that's what it was, but it may not have been that.
Some kind of citrus fruit, probably.
Some kind of produce.
Produce is tough.
And so I show back up at the house, and my wife's like, why did you get all this? We'll say it's limes. I can't remember if that's what it is, but we'll say. I was like, buy one, get one. She was like, if you just get one, it's half off. And I was like, oh.
But now we have two bags of limes.
Now, surely we will use these 32 limes over the next 2 weeks before they go bad.
Didn't you say we were going down to the islands?
Look, scurvy is real. All right. Adam, what do you think? This is an idea I had. We've gotten a bunch of really good emails here recently.
Yes, I agree.
And so while this isn't necessarily like a story time or anything like that,
right.
I just thought we would go through them because we have a lot of – and they really vary, and there's some questions, some comments, things like that. You okay with that?
Yeah.
All right, let's start. Matt Rubright. And again, our email address is carolinainsiderpod@gmail.com. It's carolinainsiderpod@gmail.com. Matt Rubright asked, he said, on one of your recent pods, recounted the Carolina basketball reunion weekend for Tar Heel Letterman. And it got Matt to wondering, what qualifies as a Letterman? Is just being a member of the varsity team sufficient? Adam, the answer is, you have to be a member of the team or a manager for a year on the varsity team. So you get a letter if you're a member of the team, a manager on the team for that year.
Why aren't letter jackets still a big thing?
It is 2018.
Well, if you get your letter, what do you do with it?
Well, I think they still do letter
jackets. In
2018. I feel like first, and maybe I'm wrong, because I emceed this event a couple of times, so I don't know if they still do it, but I know as recently as like 2 years ago, whenever you got your first letter, they had a little ceremony, and you'd get a letter jacket. I don't think you got it every single time, but when you got your first letter, you'd get a letter jacket.
Good, I think
so. They still did it. Yeah. It's just nobody really rocks them anymore because they don't go to the sock hop and to the drive-in.
Those should come back, and I think they will. Just stay tuned. Right about the time you make it through the self-check, letter jackets are back.
Jay Exum, who also he did DM this to me on Twitter, but let me explain something about DMs on Twitter. I don't pay attention to them much. I'm not sliding in anybody's DMs at this point in my life.
I don't even think of that as a viable communication method.
And it sounds weird. DM. All right. Jay said he DM'd this to me, but he also emailed it to me. He said, listen to the pod when you and Adam discussed the Dean Smith statue. He said, I agree with both of you, but I think he has an idea that fits the moment and Dean's character perfectly. Don't make a Dean Smith statue, but have a Charlie Scott statue. And there's a couple other things that Jay goes into to explain the idea, but I think we all understand. Charlie Scott, who just went into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, of course, the first African-American to play at Carolina. And I've seen that suggestion from other places or have maybe Dean Smith.
It was in your Twitter DM.
Yeah, it was in my DMs. Whoever sent that to me. But no, then there's or the suggestion of maybe having Coach Smith and Charlie Scott, you know, something – like that, I see the value in it, But I also can see, I mean, not everybody is a huge sports fan. I don't know. I don't think it's a bad idea, I guess is my point.
Yeah.
If somebody told me that's what they were doing, I would say, good. I think that's a good idea.
But I think it's also worth exploring other options.
Yes. To find one that works for everybody.
Sure.
Kevin Kilby. Thanks for the mention during the pod. Maggie Ruth Kilby is our new young listener. You remember, Adam, we mentioned we had a baby Tar Heel fan. That is Maggie Ruth Kilby.
We're big with babies.
Well, let me please continue on this email. You're going to find out just how popular we are. For some reason, I can turn on the pod in the car, and Jones's voice calms her down when she's crying. The complete opposite effect of how most people treat turning me on in the car, including my own children. She is also enamored with the football game on Saturday, paid little to no attention to any of our family while the game was on, contorting her neck in almost inhumane angles to see the TV when my wife or her sister tried to get Maggie's attention, extremely proud that the love for Tar Heel Athletics has been passed down at just 3 months old. It's signed One Proud Daddy, Kevin Kilby. Good work, Kevin. You're doing the Lord's work out there, sir.
Yeah, that's a good job.
Adam, I'm going to let you read this one because it is such a good one. From Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Cherry Lee.
I've spent way too much time thinking about this email.
Congratulations, Kelly. You're inside Adam's head.
Yeah. If I'm supposed to have done something for you and it hasn't gotten done, and I'm thinking of a few specific people and things, it's probably because I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
The really important stuff.
Yeah.
Hi, Jones and Adam.
Hello.
Writes Kelly. I am in need of some expert pod advice.
You've come to the right place.
I'm getting married in a month, and I want to use UNC basketball players as table numbers.
Everything you've said makes sense so far.
With a picture and some fun facts and the jersey number on each table marker. I would actually like to go to this.
Adam's like, can I when you renew your vows one day, Adam, you can do the same thing.
Yeah. I have a pretty good list, but I need to add another player or two, and I could use your help.
Okay.
Am I leaving someone out, such as possibly Bryce Johnson or Rick Fox? Mm. Is my current list justifiable?
Whoa, always a big question.
A complicating factor is that since I'll be using jersey numbers as table numbers, I can't have duplicates. I can make a case for Ty Lawson over Marcus Paige, but how does one choose between Charlie Scott and Antoine Jameson?
Ooh,
they
hard.
Both wore 33.
Yeah.
Or wow, the Sean May, Jerry Stackhouse, Brad Daugherty debacle. 42s.
Yeah.
We are getting married in Texas, so it's going to be tough for me to go.
Yeah.
And my fiance did not go to UNC.
Not everybody's perfect.
So I'm really treating this as an educational experience for the many non-Tar Heels in attendance. Your help would be greatly appreciated. Another key question. P.S. I'm waffling on what player I want for my and my fiancé's table. Danny Green is one of my all-time favorites, and my fiancé is a Spurs fan, but can I really not seat myself at the Jordan table?
Oh, man.
These are the hard decisions nobody tells you about when you plan a wedding.
All right. Well, let me first say about the wedding number that you, the table that you sit at.
Right.
Kelly, this is all your call. It doesn't matter. You can make no wrong choice on that one. You just pick whoever makes you the happiest. If that's Michael Jordan, do that. If it's Danny Green, do that. You pick who you want on that one, I think. Right? Doesn't matter. It's your day.
It's the one day you as the bride can do whatever you want. And people may, like, when they leave, be like, well, that was kind of weird. But then they immediately say, but whatever, she's the bride.
Yeah, that's right.
If you want your bridesmaids to wear Danny Green jerseys.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, it's your day.
Fine.
Do it. Because once you have kids, it doesn't happen anymore. You get no days. So.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, I'm going to give you the numbers that she has so far. Now, she has a table of numbers here, which I'm assuming are the ones that she has already settled on. Is that how you understood this?
I think so, but I want to, before you get too far into it, I want to ask this. Now, I'm not an event planner or a wedding planner, so this may be a stupid question. Do you have to have table numbers, or could you just have table names? Oh, you're at the Big Grits table.
Yeah.
Oh, you're at the Rick Fox table. You're at Marcus Page.
That's a really good question.
And on the table is like the jersey that says Page. And of course, they're going to have a number 5.
Right.
But it's not table 5, it's the Page table.
Maybe it's both. Maybe it's Page table 5 or table number 5.
Yeah, but
five.
Then you got your duplicate problem. I'm trying to solve the duplicate
that's
problem.
That's a good point. I like that idea.
I do too.
Are you sure you're not an event planner?
I didn't think I was, but maybe I am.
All right.
For all your wedding needs, contact the pod.
This is what we have, according to Kelly. Now, again, this is my assumption, or these are the ones that she has settled on so far. Big Grits, table number 0. Actually, 00, but we'll accept 0.
Make sure you change that to 00. Yeah. That's important to him. But, again, I think you could just go Big Grits.
Ty Lawson, Marcus Page battling that out at the number 5 jersey. I'm going to tell you a way that I would decide the duplicate numbers if it is still a problem after Adam's wonderful suggestion. If you won a national championship, you get the number.
I agree 100%. That's how I'd break the 42 deadlock.
Yeah. Look, I love Marcus Page as much as anybody in the world. But Ty Lawson did win a national title. And you know I love Ty Lawson. Lenny Rosenbluth, number 10, slam dunk.
Yep.
Phil Ford, number 12, of course.
Yep.
Danny Green, number 14. Danny, who such a popular, one of the more popular Tar Heels, I think, in current day. Mm-hmm. Vince Carter, 15, yes. The blind bomber, George Glamick, Adam, number 20. Do you know that he just shot from specific marks on the court? That really is an unbelievable story. Like, yes. I don't think younger Tar Heel fans understand that, and I'm not sure I'm qualified at this exact second. But George Glamick couldn't see real well.
Right.
So he would shoot from specific places on the court because he had, like, memorized the feel of how to make it and was an all like a national player of the year or whatever. What an incredible story that is.
Well, and I'm so glad he came along when he did because we were able to nickname him the Blind Bomber.
Right.
In 2018, we wouldn't be able to call him that. We'd have to be much more sensitive. Yeah. But what a perfect nickname that totally sums up the whole situation.
Michael Jordan, number 23. That's a hands obvious.
Yep.
Rasheed Wallace or Kenny Smith at number 30. This one's a hard one. I know that you have a special place in your heart for Kenny Smith.
Yeah, the Jet.
Rasheed Wallace, though, is Rasheed Wallace. That one's tough.
And see that, but if you just have table names.
Yeah, that's right. That's
you're,
right.
You're at the Sheed table or you're at the Jet table.
Can you imagine the what benefits to be at the Sheed table? Wow.
Well, and do you get to assign guests, like if they have, like if you have some friends who are kind of similar to Sheed,
right?
Put them at the Sheed table.
That'd be a fun table.
Yeah.
Billy Cunningham, number 32.
Kangaroo Kid, another great nickname.
Charlie Scott, Antoine Jameson, both number 33s.
That's a tough one.
Charlie Scott, Basketball Hall of Fame, had impact in so much more than just basketball. Antoine Jameson, one of the most dominant seasons ever for Carolina. That one, I don't know. That one's nearly impossible.
Just go with the names.
Bob McAdoo, 35. Underrated, one of the best players. I mean, in the top, when the NBA did their 50 greatest players, he was in there. Unbelievable. Transferring to Carolina, but, unbelievable player.
Son's on the team now.
Yeah, that's right. Sam Perkins, 41. No doubt. Sean May, Brad Doherty, Jerry Stackhouse, 42. Go back to the championship thing.
Yep.
44, Larry Miller, Tyler Hansbrough, number 50, James Worthy, 52. All of these are slam dunks.
Ah!
Whoa.
44, Tyler Zeller? Kelly's a 2011 grad who I would have thought would have had a little love for Big Z, a pod guest.
Larry Miller, though. Everybody of the Larry Miller era says one of the best players. I mean, neither you nor I. You and I both understand his significance, but never saw him play in person.
Right.
Always say he, and he was the one got Coach Smith, kind of the leader of those teams that got to the 3 straight Final Fours. Adam, is she leaving anybody out?
Dick Grubar.
Yes. There will be ramifications for that, Kelly. Bryce Johnson is a good one in the more recent times. You could go table number 11 for sure. Let's see.
No Pinson or Barry table?
Ooh, yeah.
One and two?
I could do Joe Barry, table number 2.
Maybe a Pinson and Barry dual table?
Yeah, 1/2.
Yeah. Again, we don't need the numbers. We just need the names.
What about Ranzino Smith?
I wondered if you were going to say that. Wasn't he 33?
Yeah.
We've already got a logjam.
Yeah, we got a logjam there.
No Dean Smith or Roy Williams table?
See, this goes to the name thing. You could just do it. Have a Smith table, a Williams table, Guthrie's table.
What about the parents at the Dean Smith and Roy Williams table? Mm. They're kind of the fathers and mothers of the whole thing.
Yep.
In fact, that's what they are.
Adam, let me tell you a little something about when two people fall in love. Kelly, terrific email. I think you're nailing it, Kelly. You don't need our advice.
Yeah.
You're doing it just right.
That's a great idea that I would have never thought of.
Yes.
We would like to see some pictures of how this turns out, and possibly a picture of the sheed table also.
Yes. Greg Hardy sent this one, which really made me laugh, Adam. Said, Jones and Adam, love the pod, listen to every episode. I enjoyed the recent story time about meeting the El Paso mascot in the elevator. The way the story was told without revealing who or what was in the elevator made me try and guess who it was that horrified the storyteller so much and made her feel awkward. I assumed she was talking about Coach K. Listening to that story time, assuming she was talking about Mike Krzyzewski, made a good story even better. That one made me laugh.
Did you go back and listen to it? And
no.
I did. It's funny.
Scott Spillman, you may remember Scott won a potty for his story time.
You may remember.
And Adam, pretty exciting that he sent us the picture of the physical potty on his mantle, proudly displayed in his home. So thank you, Scott, for that.
I thought it was nice that it was right next to a trophy for a marathon, because both are significant achievements.
No doubt.
That require a lot of time and effort.
One more. Elaine Floyd sent this one. Said, thank you so much for the interview with Coach Doherty. Love Matt as a player and was truly saddened by the way things played out during his coaching tenure. Hearing his side of the story, his maturity and accepting how it all played out was healing and inspiring for me. He is forever will be a great Tar Heel. Wish him the best. And thank you for bringing this interview. And I read that because that is very similar, Adam, to a lot of really positive comments that you and I received, although all we did was give Coach Doherty a headset and let him go. We asked him a couple of questions for sure, but the response to that interview has been extraordinarily positive. I honestly don't know if we've received one negative response, which is, I'm sure there some people received it negatively, but we have not received one negative response. I think most everybody really enjoyed it. A lot of people I've just seen on social media have reached out to Coach Doherty and, you know, given him kind words, which I'm assuming is impactful for him to hear those positive things. So glad everybody enjoyed it. Again, appreciate Coach Doherty doing that. And really was, I think, just a good thing all the way around for Coach Doherty and to have that opportunity.
And a nice reminder, some of the things he talked about to kind of keep in mind going forward. And if you haven't listened, we hope you'll go back and listen. It's right up there with some of the best folks we've had on in terms of insight and things that maybe you wondered about and now you have an answer to. It was nice to hear that on the record.
Adam, anything else before we say goodbye?
No.
All right. The rest of this week is just really in flux, primarily because of this hurricane, the weather situation. We are going, you know, hopefully this thing just turns away and we have a normal week in every respect, but just don't know. So we hope to be back with you for another podcast later this week. We hope that the football game goes on at 12 noon, and we hope that absolutely no one's life is negatively affected by this storm, but we're just going to have to wait and see. So obviously be safe for your information as far as just the game is concerned. Keep your ears and eyes open, GoHeels.com, all the official social media accounts. Follow those. That information will be as available as possible and as quickly as possible once a decision is made. But it is secondary, if this storm does what everybody thinks it is going to do, secondary to keeping yourself and your family and your possessions and everything as safe as possible. All right. We have a Rick Steinbach. Since Rick gave us a weather update, we have an old school see you later big grits from Rick in the past. We'll let him and the RZA send us off here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
This is Rick Steinbacher signing off from a guy who was at Carolina in 93 to another guy who had an awesome year in 1993. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.